prime time on Football Friday. 1080 The Fan.
Professional football in America is a special game. A unique game. Played nowhere else on earth. It is a rare game. The man who play it. Make it so.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Tap by Coors Light. Duck fans, as you power up for game day, grab some frost-brewed Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer. Please drink responsibly.
That's gonna make the f***ing difference between winning and losing.
On 1080 The Fan.
Take it in. So last time, Suk and I are going to be together for a long, long time.
Breathe it in.
Many, 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 many days.
But absence will make the heart grow fonder and our love affair will thrive in the new year.
Many, many days.
Maybe I'll just come by your house and hang out.
Yeah, please don't.
Can I?
No.
I can't swing by over the holidays?
Mm-mm.
Drop off a card? Fruitcake?
Just mail it.
Have some wine?
Keep the fruitcake.
What if I want to come by and hang out? I'm calling Nurse Nye. She'll let me over.
She might.
Yeah.
That would be your ticket.
Yeah. Nurse Nice likes me.
She does.
She likes to hang out.
Yeah, she likes you.
And I have her number somewhere. I'm going to end round you and invite myself over for a Rob dinner party.
You do that.
Over the holiday season.
Can't wait.
And you won't know when it's coming.
No, you can come anytime over to my house, sir. You're welcome at my house anytime.
Hang out at the Rops.
All right. So, Suk's going on sabbatical beginning Monday. We will not have a show Monday.
No show Monday.
It's going to get a little weird around here for the next couple of weeks.
Well, I think all the shows are going through a flux here as people burn vacation days and.
Yeah, it's the holiday time.
Sure.
And that much of the time can make for fun shows.
Yeah, it kind of gets a little loose. We had a very Swayze Christmas once, right?
I think it's really sexy.
Things happen.
Yep. So. This is our last show together until probably the first of the year, until after the big bowl games.
Oh, yeah. Big bowl games.
poo-pooing the bowl games now? Is that the deal? Is what you're doing?
There's not.
It'll be after the college football playoff. That's big bowl game.
Yeah, there you go. College football playoff.
Well, that's the 29th, yeah.
There's only a handful of games, to be honest with you. Like the Army-Navy game, to me, coming up this weekend, that's better than 90% of the bowl games.
Army-Navy, I have a fun fact.
I love Army-Navy, although Navy isn't very good this year, and Army is, which is usually the exact opposite of what's happened over the last 25 years.
Did you know this date, this very date, right here?
Right here
in
now.
1963. The Army-Navy game featured the first ever slow motion replay in television.
Get right the hell out of town.
No.
Where'd you find,
I don't
where'd
want
you
to.
Find
wow.
that little nugget?
I found that on internet.
I haven't signed up for that yet, but I'm thinking one of these times I should do that.
And when they did it, the announcer had to say, "This is not live. Army did not score again." It's true.
Wow.
True story.
My favorite sports book of all time is the John Feinstein Army-Navy book.
True story.
Yeah.
And it's just a great book. It's not even just a great sports book. It's a great book.
Yeah.
I just have a lot of respect for anyone that goes to those institutions. And you know, you throw Air Force in there, any of the service academies. It's just to carry on an Ivy League type education, the demands of college football, which I'm well aware of. Like I went to BYU, which is a school that they actually require you to go to class, which sucks. I should have gone to the SEC. And tried to take on a real major with the demands of football and failed miserably, by the way. Had to change my major. So the fact that those kids at Army, Navy, and Air Force go through a better education than what I got, same demands on your time in college football, and then throw the demands of a cadet, on top of that and manage to keep all that straight, it's amazing to me. I think that those are some of the very best men that we have in our country. And it just, I'm humbled at what they go through. And so when I watch that game, it blows me away. And that book, the Feinstein book, really talks in depth about that. And there isn't much better than what the end of the Army Navy game, when they walk across and they sing the fight songs of both institutions. And especially when you're talking about like the backdrop of war, not necessarily now, but in years past, when, you know, he points out in the book that, you know, when they're singing those songs, a lot of those people will be fighting side by side in a matter of months, and some of them won't be coming home. it just puts everything in a different perspective, because so many times in sports we use the going to war term, and right, we love to talk about football as a battle. But for these guys doing this, this isn't a joke. This
Kellen Winslow?
Yeah, Kellen Winslow. This isn't something that you just throw out. They are going to go to war, and some of them aren't going to go home. And this isn't just another game for them. And I think that is unique. I think it's special. And it's one that every year I love to watch. And it's on my bucket list. And it kind of bothers me that, 40 years I haven't gotten out there. But I at some point before I go, I will go see an Army-Navy game in person.
All right, so now we're going to break. And then coming up next, we'll get to vacancies filled. We had the last few college football coaching vacancies, although there is one fairly major one Power Five one still open. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to that next, 412 on the Fan.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Tap by Coors Light.
On 1080 The Fan.
Stevie Wonder.
Feeling it. I kind of like this Christmas kick we're on. Got me feeling something. Got me in a mood.
That's what we're here for.
By the way, someone asked, we were talking about the Army-Navy game, someone asked why the Marines don't have an academy. That's the Naval Academy, just in case people didn't know.
All right, so we've got Georgia Tech making a hire, and we've got Kansas State trying to make a hire but then failing.
Yeah, pretty much.
So we have Utah State open, Kansas State open, and Temple is open because Georgia Tech hired Temple's coach.
Yeah.
So his name is Jeff Collins. And
can I tell you that I have no idea whatsoever anything about Jeff Collins?
Well, you wouldn't be the only one. I mean, Jeff Collins was the coach at Temple. He was the guy who followed Matt Rhule. He had spent a couple of stints on the Georgia Tech staff, and he is a defensive guy, but he's known as a great recruiter. And basically Georgia Tech is saying, okay, if we're going to go away from the gimmicky Paul Johnson offense, we need a guy who, one, is from the South and he's from Georgia, and two, who can just, because they're right in the middle of fertile recruiting ground. They just need to get better players in there.
Yeah.
And so they went with a recruiter, and so they hired Jeff with a G. G-E-O-F-F. Joff.
Like Joff Petrie?
Joff Collins. So, there's that one.
I know nothing about Temple football other than Matt Rhule was their coach. Like, that's the only time I've ever heard anything about Temple football.
Yeah, I don't think they're very good.
And then he left and went to, Baylor? And I haven't heard of them since.
Yeah, wasn't Adazio their coach before he got the BC job, too?
I have no idea.
No idea.
Once again,
you're right.
The only thing I know about Temple, Matt Rhule. Now we know two things.
Steve Adazio. Boy, that's a good poll. Al Golden before that. Bobby Wallace.
Was Al Golden the guy that wore the tie? Did he take the Miami job? Anybody?
I'm going to say yes.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think I know what you're, yeah. Okay, he looks like Will Muschamp, but only wears a tie.
Yeah, you know what? Then I let me amend my statement. I knew two things about Temple football. For whatever reason, I thought he was like at Villanova. I remember Al Golden, and he took the job at Miami and failed miserably, and he wore the tie, the dress certain tie. I just thought he came from somewhere other than Temple. So now we know multiple things about Temple football.
Golden, he wasn't horrible. He took over Temple when they were 1-11,
mm-hmm.
and he got him to 9 wins and then 8 wins, and then he went to Miami and he won. He got him to 9 wins there, too, but...
Did he really?
That's not good enough.
I thought I remember him flaming out.
Well, I mean, he got fired.
Oh, he went...
Because, you know, Miami thinks they're like...
Well, he went to... Yeah, he went 6-6, 7-5, 9-4, 6-7, and then...
4-3.
4-3. And didn't make it through the season, and he got canned. He's now the linebackers coach with the Detroit Lions.
Oh, interesting.
Go Al Golden. I wonder if he still wears a tie.
He's one of those guys where you look at it, like they show an NFL sideline, and you're like, wait, I recognize that guy.
Hey.
It's like Derek Dooley always pops up. It's like, hey, that's Derek Dooley.
Like Derek
What's
Dooley's,
he doing now?
And he's getting yelled at by some NFL guy.
So Matt Rhule was there. They were 2-10 under Matt Rhule. Then they went 10-4. He goes to Baylor. And by the way, everybody's saying he's doing great things at Baylor because Baylor was stripped bare. And they got back to .500 this year.
So that's a...
And Rhule... Well, yeah, that's pretty good in his first year, man.
Not his first year, though.
I think it was. If it's not his first year, it's his second year. Because last year they didn't... Yeah, that's true. Last year they didn't win.
Yeah, I'm looking here.
Or the only win was Kansas, so that doesn't count.
Okay.
Rule went 0-11 or like 1-11.
Yeah.
And then there were 500 this year, and everybody's giving him a lot of praise for that. And his name comes up in NFL jobs for some reason. Everybody likes Matt Rule.
It is weird. You've talked about this, that for whatever reason, sometimes like college guys, like everyone gets a bee in the bonnet over him, like in the NFL.
He's a hot name.
Yeah.
He must, I don't know, put out or something. So Geoff Collins is 7-6.
He must put out. No, he runs a faith-based program. Didn't you know that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, by the way, I have something on that note here.
Oh, on a faith-based program. Yeah, this was good.
So
we talk about faith and handling junk.
Geoff Collins, 7-6 and 8-4 at Temple. He goes to take over Georgia Tech. Now, Kansas State, they were going to hire Seth Luttrell, the hotshot offensive guy from North Texas.
Yeah, everyone apparently, he seemed to be the hottest name, right? He was a guy that all season that you heard about. Well, that and like Matt Campbell, he was one of the names that you heard circling for big time jobs.
Yeah. And apparently at Kansas State, Luttrell said he wanted to bring his whole staff.
Yeah.
And they didn't want that, which is scaring the hell out of people in Manhattan, Kansas, because they're like, oh, my God, that means that whoever comes in has to keep Bill Schneider's kid, you know?
Yep.
And so like they're going to force certain assistants down their throat. And what coach is going to take a job when they can't bring in their own guys?
That's a real tough one for Kansas
State.
That's
a bad move, man. So
horrible because it's not a great job. It isn't.
Oh, it's a horrible job. Dude, I mean, that's the worst job in college football in Power Five. And the only reason nobody thinks it is because Bill Schneider did so well there. Yeah. And Bill Schneider is a effing miracle genius. Worker, yes. Dude. That guy, that is the best single coaching job of anyone in the history of college football, and I will not hear otherwise. Seriously, he was so good, and if you've ever been there, you would know what I'm talking about. That has so many challenges, and they're back to that now that he's gone. So the interesting thing is, you know, who will they go get? Now they're targeting like North Dakota State's coach, which is about right. I mean, it's like,
yeah, that's
so. It just makes me happy that Kansas, which is not a great job either, but is a better job than Kansas State, gets less miles, and those buffoons are going to get the North Dakota State coach. That makes me happy.
When you already have a sketchy program that people don't think necessarily is a great job.
Have you ever been out there?
No.
Okay.
No.
Now, here's the difference. Lawrence, Kansas, which is where KU is a nice campus. It's close to city. There's a lot going on. It doesn't look or feel like, you know, Kansas when you think of Kansas. Manhattan, Kansas, where Kansas State is literally in the middle of nowhere. It takes forever to get there. It's flat. It's gross. It's an ag school. It's just not good, man.
Only person besides Bill Schneider to helm that thing in a couple decades is what, Ron Prince? And
he failed.
And he failed miserably. He was sub 500. So,
and before that, look at their record.
Yeah. And you're not going to, and by the way, Kent State isn't paying anyone a gajillion dollars. You're not going to be able to hire your own staff. You may have to take on Bill Snyder's kid. Why would, if you have other options, why would you take that job? They're going to end up with someone who's young and unproven that no one else wants, or they're going to have to find an older guy. You know, maybe this is the Leavitt thing, right? Where he's like, I may not get another opportunity and I'm just going to have to take this. But they are really handcuffing themselves with this whole, you have to take on certain assistants.
Well, they're not going that Leavitt route, it sounds like.
No.
Leavitt's, the AD that was tied to Leavitt is long gone. Yeah. He went off. I think he's at Tennessee or whatever. But anyway, they're looking at the Chris Klayman, I think is the name of the guy. He's the North Dakota State coach. So the only openings, Utah State, K-State, and Temple. So to review, Ohio State hired Ryan Day, Kansas hired Les Miles, North Carolina hired Mack Brown, Maryland hired Mike Locksley from Alabama.
Yeah, he's the OC.
That dude was horrible at New Mexico.
Yep.
I mean, horrible. It's amazing that he is. Nick Saban can just.
There is no better rehab for a coach than going to Alabama, because Nick spreads some fairy dust on you and you just smell like roses and you get jobs.
Colorado hired Les Tucker, defensive coordinator at Georgia. Geoff Collins to Georgia Tech. Liberty hired Hugh Freeze.
Yes.
And Hugh Freeze is the old Ole Miss coach who got turfed for calling prostitutes from the school phone.
And in case anyone was wondering, Liberty University is a religious institution.
Didn't Liberty also make a splash by hiring like Art Briles for a day or something?
That I don't know. No, I think what you might be thinking of is their AD. You know who the Liberty AD is?
Yeah, they hired...
It's Ian McCaw, who was the guy at Baylor who basically got jettisoned out of there because he was the one who oversaw the whole Baylor...
Yeah, the rape scandal.
Rape scandal.
So, the
the rape guy hired the prostitute guy, and they sit up there, and I don't know if you saw their quotes, but they talk about Jesus more than anybody I've ever seen in football.
Well, it's a nonprofit religious institution. It's a big Christian school. Think, you know, BYU, right? Same sort of thing. Notre Dame, if you want. It is a religious institution. And on top of that, Hugh Freeze said that Liberty was the only university that could handle his junk. That's a real quote. He got on the little dais today and said that only Liberty can handle his junk. Holy Hugh Freeze. But he's learned, Rob. He's learned
well,
and he's moved on.
Okay, in fairness to him, he was not talking about his junk.
I understand that, but he still had the wherewithal to say that only Liberty can handle your junk. How do you not hear that coming out of your mouth?
No.
He was talking about, he said he's put his wife in some precarious positions and he's got a lot of baggage. And he said only, what did he say? Only JC, only Jesus Christ can handle my junk.
Can handle his junk.
His baggage is what he meant.
But. And so that's what you've put your wife in some uncomfortable situations. Yeah, prostitutes. I would say that's mildly uncomfortable.
By the way, Liberty only had one football season. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Liberty Flames year by year. 1 year, and it was Turner Gill. He went 6-6 and retired.
Really?
Yeah.
Turner Gill's out?
Yeah, that's why they hired Hugh Freeze.
No, but I didn't know he retired.
Yeah, he called it quits.
I think he just made enough money where he's like, look, I'm not doing this
anymore. Dude, Kansas is probably still paying that guy.
He was, I guess, like
he was horrible.
Buffalo, right? That's where he made his name?
Yeah. He won, you know what his best his best year at Buffalo was?
I don't know, maybe 8 wins?
8-6.
And Kansas hired him, gave him all that dough?
Well, no, Kansas hired him after they went 5-7 the year later.
Oh.
And at Kansas, he went 3-9, 2-10, and then off to Liberty to resurrect his career to 6-6 and walk off into the sunset.
Then he walked away. Well, apparently they couldn't handle his junk, but they can handle Hugh Freeze's.
So Hugh Freeze is going to Liberty. Louisville hired Scott Satterfield, the Appalachian State coach. Matt Wells to Texas Tech. That's a sneaky good hire. That guy's good.
Yeah.
He's the guy from Utah State. Central Michigan hired Jim McElwain.
Yeah, Bartu hates Jim McElwain. And I don't know, be interested to see, because he was an Alabama OC, and then he went to Colorado State and had some success, ended up with a Florida job, and then, you know, the whole naked shark thing. And, oh, yeah, he sucked.
Well, that's not him on the naked shark.
I know, but it's still fun to say.
Naked on the shark.
Naked on. Well, naked. Was it on the shark or by the shark?
On the shark.
I thought it was next to you.
I thought it was the guy on top of the shark.
I think he's spooning a naked shark.
Is he spooning it?
I think he's spooning it.
Or being spooned by it.
And allegedly, it's not McElwain. It's just someone who looks like a fatter version of him.
Yeah, no, he's basically on top of the
shark. He's on, he's mounting the shark.
Pretty much.
How drunk do you have to be to get naked with a shark?
God, gross.
I mean, have you ever been that drunk?
Well,
let's not say never, but
look, it's complicated.
I understand.
McElwain goes to Central Michigan.
The Chippewas.
Yeah. Okay. So coming up next, it's time for In the News. The tolls are moving forward. It is 4:29. Here's Mike.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Tap by Coors Light.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, coming up the Hot 5 at 5. We'll talk about your bad sports Saturday, which is coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, we're in that time of the year where it's can be a little rough until the NFL starts playing on Saturdays.
Also, how about this story of the baseball players dying? Did you read that story? Luis Valbuena.
Yeah, you know what? I saw it.
Did you see the details of that thing?
No, there was two of them though, right?
Yeah, Jose Castillo and Luis Valbuena died in a car accident.
I saw the story, but I did not read the details of it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's crazy.
Where was it at?
Venezuela.
Yeah, because there was there was a HBO real. Where did the Royals pitcher die?
Yordano Ventura.
Yeah.
I think he was in Venezuela as well.
Was it Venezuela? Because there was one of the Latino countries where they did a story where the, I guess, driving there is like the most dangerous thing in the world.
Yeah.
So that's Venezuela. That's where this happened to.
No, he was in Dominican Republic.
It was the Dominican Republic then. They did a story on that I guess in the Dominican Republic, there's no traffic laws. There's no nothing. Drinking and driving is really commonplace. And there's been a lot of athletes, professional athletes, baseball players that have died doing this.
Yeah, this is different than that. But we'll tell you about that coming up. Right now, it's December 7th. Yes, December 7th, 2018. Time for the news.
Pearl Harbor anniversary.
Time for the news.
And... oh, there you go.
God.
On the ball, Lynch.
What are you doing in there?
Dynamite job.
Probably on Facebook.
No, I was putting some 9-10 promos in.
What? Hot 9-10 promos.
It's important.
I guess.
All right. It is time to talk tolls.
I saw this. They're coming.
Let's talk toll.
Let's do it.
Some toll talk.
For whom the toll tolls? Let's do it. It's going to toll for me, unfortunately.
Oregon approved a plan yesterday to toll sections of Interstate 5 and 205 in the Portland area. The move is the culmination of more than a year of study kickstarted by the 2017 statewide transportation bill signed by Governor Kate Brown. Oregon's application to federal officials proposes charging drivers on the increasingly congested interstates as a way to raise revenue for road projects and manage traffic.
I'd be fine to pay a toll if I thought it was actually going to make a difference or that my money would be spent wisely and that we would actually improve our system. But does anyone think that any of those things are going to happen? I just feel like I'm going to pay to use the highway and not a damn thing's going to change.
Oregon's Transportation Commission unanimously signed off on the proposal. The application now heads to the Federal Highway Administration for consideration. Oregon hopes to hear from them in early 2019 and potentially hire a consultant in April to start working in more detail on the issue. Now, they said they would use the revenue to help pay for seismic improvements to the Abernathy Bridge and surrounding areas on I-205 between Oregon City and Westland. On I-5, the tolls would apply to drivers broadly between the Alberta Going and Multnomah Boulevard exits.
I'm just excited about giving the state more money because I feel like, that's really what I want to do. Here, take some more of it. You'll spend it wisely.
The exit borders for tolls in both areas are not yet finalized. So.
And where was the 205 one they're going to do?
Buckle up. Yeah, that one I don't see.
Because I can avoid the I-5 one there. What's the 205? Find a way around that, can I?
Well, you could get a little, like a hovercraft.
Ooh, that'd be nice. What about one of those boats they keep talking about? Let's go and ride the old Willamette up.
You could do that. You could ride your bike. Why don't you do that? Ride your bike down here.
Doesn't seem like the most convenient way to get to work.
There is a local group led by outgoing Representative Julie Parrish of West Lynn, and they are looking to put a ballot measure out there that would give Oregon voters the final say on any toll proposals, which is good.
Let's do that. Even though I can't vote for it.
Now, they would not vote for it, don't you think?
They
would vote it down.
I would certainly hope so.
Oregonians would vote that down.
Fingers crossed. Please do it for me because, again, I can't vote here.
All right, well, this Jeremy Christian guy is a bit of a problem in jail.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've been reading about what he's got going on. Now, he's the guy who stabbed and killed the two guys on the... three guys. Two of them died on the MAX train.
Yeah, he was the white supremacist. And
yeah.
He was yelling at was there an African-American, I think a Middle Eastern?
Two women.
Yeah.
Yep, and a couple of guys stepped in to help out, and he stabbed them and killed them. And then he stabbed another guy who lived. He had really long hair, and he's certifiably nuts. Like, yeah. he belongs in an
institution. And everyone knew that he was certifiably nuts.
Oh, yeah. The police knew who he was. He'd been a problem for a long time. Now, here's what he's doing in jail. Now, he's being held, of course. He was arrested in May of that was May of 17.
Yeah.
Doesn't that seem like this year? Last year.
It does seem like that was a fairly recent thing. But I think sometimes with big stories that happens. Because that was a big deal when that went down.
So he's in lockdown now. And he looks like, he is just his rocker.
Is he gone to trial yet or... I'm assuming he's pleading insanity.
He's scheduled for trial in June.
Okay.
On aggravated murder charges for the MAX attack. And a former Multnomah County sheriff said, believe me, nobody wants that trial to come quicker than the staff at the county jail. Apparently this guy...
be done with him.
He faced multiple charges from the attack on the MAX train. Just 4 days after his arrest, He got into trouble for yelling and pounding on the cell of another inmate. He told the female inmate he was going to tear the cell door from the hinges and rip her head off.
Oh, that's lovely.
And then he threatened a deputy. He said, "I slash throats for a living." One day later, he was in trouble again for being disruptive and failing to follow orders after refusing to remove a jumpsuit, which covered his window in his cell. Then he's pretty good until June, when he was written up for being disrespectful to a deputy after using a racial slur. He immediately asked if we were going to belly chain him when he came out on a walk and said, "You and that N-word sergeant can go F yourselves."
He just seems like a delightful human being, right? Can't we just admit that there's some people in this world that have just...
Well, imagine if this guy gets put back out on the street.
Well, no, because he's murdering people. So let's just put a needle in his arm and be done with it, because there's some people in this world that have just... they've defaulted on humanity's dues, and they're not going to be saved. So let's just go ahead and put this one down.
Do you want more?
Some rabid dogs need to be put down. Oh,
there's fights.
More?
Oh, there's way more. Yeah, he was involved in two fights behind bars. He scuffled with an inmate during a walk. The other inmate was taken to the hospital to get stitches. He was not seriously hurt. And then they locked him down for 35 days for that. And then he assaulted another inmate in his cell in July.
So he
punched him in the face.
I'm not like a huge death penalty guy. I'm not one of these that's like, "Hey, let's kill everyone. There's no redemption." But there are some people where enough's enough. Just end it.
So they charged him with assault in the fourth degree while he's in there. So they've added that. And he has pleaded not guilty to that.
Yeah. Can we just, can we leave like a rope in his cell and maybe he takes care of it himself? Like, this is the pathetic human being.
Jail records show he has a history of causing problems behind bars that date back well before his arrest. So his name's Jeremy Christian, and he is a bit of a handful.
I would say so.
They're not happy with him. Pattern of violence and disruptive behavior.
Like a cell in a basement. Can't like Hannibal Lecter him? Like, well, put him down there with Carice.
It's just so scary. It's like, how is this guy even out on the street?
I know.
You know? Like, surely there are people that have come across him in his prior arrests or whatever that know that this was going to happen.
Yeah.
That he was going to kill someone.
Ticking time bomb.
That's just scary, man.
It is. And you wonder how many other, because clearly the dude's...
He's off his rocker.
He's insane. And think about how many others that are like him that are out milling around that just haven't gone that far yet.
Well, it's, but I'm just saying, it's one thing to know that there are crazy people that are capable of really bad stuff that we don't know.
Yeah.
It's another when you know that there are people that have dealt with them that are like, dude,
it's only a matter of time.
That's right.
It's like in the you see this like in domestic violence cases, right? Like the husband or the ex-boyfriend keeps coming back, and until he kills someone, it's like, what? Do something. Does he have to murder someone? Yeah. It's sad that sometimes that's what it takes, right? He actually has to kill someone before we're like, all right, enough's enough.
All right, coming up next, what are the top schools in Oregon? I bet you can't guess. Wait, I bet you can.
I bet I can.
It's a 444 on the Fan.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Tap by Coors Light.
On 1080 The Fan.
This is one of Mariah Carey's finest works, in my opinion.
I think this is probably what she's known for.
Oh my God, such a good tune.
Than just about anything else. It's like wouldn't you say if you had to put one collective, like, Christmas song out there, this would probably be it?
What do you mean?
It's like the most...
recognizable Christmas song?
Yeah, I'd say that. Like, if you're going to say, all right, Christmas music is here, like, it's this. This is, like, now the new...
It's definitely up there.
Universally recognized Christmas.
I still think you could go with Nat King Cole, throw a good classic out there, and people would be just into that one as this one.
Sure. I mean, that's old school. So if you go in old school, new school, this is the, like I said, it's become the gold standard, I think, for Christmas songs.
Don't you think Bing is number one?
Again, with the olds, but you're probably talking about multiple generations ago. You get someone that's like in their 30s, they're not thinking Bing or Nat King Cole. You're thinking Mariah Carey.
Now, Time did a piece on this. Most popular Christmas song ever. And it appears that they have chosen here on Sports Talk Radio, The Fan.
Sports look. Now we're getting the inevitable blowback against Mariah Carey because it's so popular.
A good tune.
Anything that becomes so popular, people inevitably hate it because it gets overplayed. So now we're getting the obligatory, I hate Mariah Carey.
Yeah, okay, whatever. You know. Silent Night is the, in the modern era, is the most recorded Christmas song.
It's a beautiful song. I was thinking maybe White Christmas, right? Probably up there too. If you want to go like Bing, right?
Yeah, White Christmas. Oh, Holy Night is number two.
Okay.
All right. It's December 7th, 2018. This is in the news. I bet you can't guess what schools are the best in Oregon.
I can probably wager a pretty good guess.
Okay.
I'm going to go with the schools that are private and rich.
What?
It's usually not that hard, right?
So they listed Oregon's top 30 school districts based on academics, teachers, clubs, activities, diversity, you know, all kinds of criteria.
So again, the rich schools, right? Because that seems...
Health and safety, college prep.
Oh, so
Lake
again,
Oswego.
Yeah, the rich schools.
West Lynn.
It's funny how this works, right? So when there's communities with a lot of wealthy people and they keep all the poor people out and they dump a bunch of money into their schools because they can, those end up being the better schools. Huh.
Mike is correct. Lake Oswego made it to all. Finally, after all of that hard work, they have made it to number one.
Man, it's just it's good to see the underdog get a W and finally just really dig their way out of that hellhole that is Lake Oswego and achieve scholastic greatness.
Yeah.
Number two, West Lynn.
It is not number two. Now my stupid page won't.
Central Catholic, perhaps?
Ooh. There may be a conspiracy theory here.
But he did say school district.
Oh, yeah. District, yeah. Yes.
District.
Yes. Yes. This is where you want to live if you move to town.
So again, I'm going to go ahead and say the most expensive places in town.
This is moving far too slow. I'm on number 21. You want to know what number 21 is?
No, not really, but let's do it anyways.
Number 20. Oh, my God. What a total effing fail.
Yeah, this is...
This thing won't pull up.
This is...
Yeah. She said.
That's what I was wondering. Is that...
It wasn't really that good.
Was that worth?
Eh.
All right.
We've got a lot of drops along the same line.
Hold on, let me pull up a different link here.
We got to be picky.
Talk amongst yourselves.
We got to be picky with our drops now. People are always like, Mike, you got like 7 drops from that segment, right? And I was like, well, a lot of them were similar to ones we have.
That is true. Right?
We just have a lot of innuendos.
Yeah, you don't want to ever get to the point where you're ignoring quality drops, but you're right. We can't save them all.
No.
Okay.
We got to be judicious with it.
Yes, Lake Oswego School District is number one. The teachers are great. And it's wealthy.
Oh, yeah.
And the facilities are excellent.
Again,
wealthy.
All that diversity.
I love how they put somehow diversity in there.
Well,
right?
It didn't get a very good grade in diversity.
Oh, and yet somehow it ended up being number one.
Its overall grade is an A.
Funny how that works.
Riverdale School District is number two in Portland. Number three is West Lynn / Wilsonville.
Again, this is
West Lynn / Wilsonville?
I'm stunned. I'm stunned at these results.
Tualatin.
Like they're tied? Because I'm pretty sure they don't share a school district.
The school district is Tualatin. Then we have Corvallis.
I think he's just glossing over that, so let's just go.
No, okay. It says West Lynn. Oh, no, sorry. West Lynn, Wilsonville School District. Yeah, number three. Best school districts in Oregon.
I thought Wilsonville had its own school district.
Well, not according to this, Mike.
I love how Mike all of a sudden is an expert on who...
Well, I'm not an expert.
Let's
just
check with Mike on this.
It's confusing.
People are saying that they do indeed share a district, but Mike is not happy with this. He doesn't understand how that's possible.
Corvallis, very good. Number four.
All right, go Corvallis.
Oh, wait, I skipped number three. Number three. Oh, shocking. Krista McAuliffe Academy School of Arts and Sciences in Lake Oswego.
Wow.
And what is the Riverdale School District?
Riverdale is in Portland, but I'm not exactly sure where exactly that is.
I'm going to go ahead and say
I'm going to go ahead and say that
it's a place where there's really expensive homes and a lot of successful two-parent families.
Yeah, it looks like it's
Yeah,
that's about right.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I love how we act as if somehow there's like no correlation. Like how do we fix our school districts?
Oh, no one acts like that. That Riverdale apparently is the west side of
Lake Oswego.
No. Well, kind of.
Yes!
I think... Yeah, kind of. Like,
yeah, someone said Riverdale is north right next to Lake Oswego near Dunthorpe.
Yeah, it's near Dunthorpe, which is like the richest part of town, right? Like, isn't the nicest house in town in up in Dunthorpe?
I do think
you ever driven up
to
there?
I think that's the most expensive.
Yeah, Riverdale is north of Lake O. It's basically directly west of Selwood, but on the west side.
So it's Lake Oswego.
Yeah, that's number two in a stunner.
So Lake Oswego and Lake Oswego are numbers one and
so
two.
There's, there's Lake O, and then there's kind of Lake O. And then there's Lake O's three. Then there's Lake O again.
Number four, though, is Corvallis.
That's a bit of an upset. Go Corvallis.
Apparently they do a great job down there. Number five, Ashland. And number six is Beaverton.
Hey!
Mike.
Yay!
That's your school district for your kids.
It will eventually be, maybe.
How about that?
When you crank out a kid, which will be happening, what? Sometime next year, I'm guessing?
Mike's having twins.
What? Did we just spill the news?
No, that's news to me if that's news.
How's your wife and Rob's kids?
I'm so sorry. Wow. Silver Falls, 7. Albany, 8. St. Paul, 9. How about that?
Oh, there you go.
And number 10 is Hood River. So Hood River County.
So basically, if you want the best school in Oregon, be rich, be white, and live in Lake Oswego.
That's about right.
Okay. I need to work on that. I've got one of those things down. I got the whiteness part down, but the rich in Lake O thing, I got to figure out something to do about that.
Okay. That's in the news, December 7th, 2018. Coming up next, it is time. Oh, it's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
You are correct, sir.
We have sports news galore, so stay tuned. This is The Fan.